Today's local stories. Very pleased to be joined on the phone now by John Defterios. He's CNN's emerging markets editor, also the anchor of Global Exchange. Joins us now from Abu Dhabi. Afternoon, John.
Hi, Sam. Nice to be back.
Good to have you. There's loads to talk about, as there always is, John. If we can start with European elections. We've been talking about this on the programme for the last few minutes. Obviously, France and Greece. European electorates beginning to make themselves heard. We're hearing the phrase, whether this is overdramatic or not, remains to be seen, European spring. That's being bandied about. But voters in both France and Greece are starting to make their positions clear, aren't they?
It's extraordinary. First, let's tick off Greece as the smallest economy in Europe at $300 million. This is an economy that's lost 20% of its size since 2009. That's one heck of a contraction. They're contracting about 5% a year right now. You couldn't have a worse outcome. As a dear friend of mine, in fact, the best man at my wedding, who's a businessman, texted me to say, we're the only country that could bring back history 50 years ago, embracing the communists and at the same time embracing the far right. It's kind of a really nasty message and a recipe for disaster if the Greeks can't put together a coalition that can really not just go with austerity, and we should be realistic about that, but provide some hope for foreign investment. There's a lot of Middle East Gulf investment that's gone into Greece and also from China into the Gulf, but that's not, or into the port of Piraeus there. That's not going to be viable if they don't give a roadmap to where they're planning to go. Put politics aside, if we can, and then suggest where do these people really want to go. If they want to move out of the euro, they should look at the implications of that, and then is it going to be a pro-growth environment if they chose to do so? That's the biggest worry. They go out, and then the options are for the Portuguese and potentially the Spaniards and the Italians, and the whole southern half of Europe decides to opt out. That's the worst-case scenario in what we see priced into the markets today, why we see Spanish banks under so much pressure today, Tim. So this didn't have a great conclusion, and the focus is off of François Hollande, even though the head of the European Council is in Paris today, Herman Van Rompuy, trying to make sure that Hollande stays on track and there's this agreement with Germany. But the real worry is the southern half of Europe, and depending on what Hollande does over the next month or so in terms of the other messages that he sends.
François Hollande must be, I guess, thankful for the breathing space. He's about to be sworn in, but all attention seems to be on Greece at the moment. But
yeah, I completely agree. And it's extraordinary. I saw George Papandreou, the former prime minister of Greece, at a conference I was chairing in Switzerland and at the St. Gallen Symposium. And he said, you know, we need to come out of this, this is before the election, with clarity so investors know where we're going. And it was 180 degrees, the opposite, Tim. I mean, somebody was begging for clarity to see if New Democracy or PASOK could, you know, provide a roadmap going forward, the two major parties. And there's such disillusionment with those two major parties, they went far left and far right. It's quite radical in terms of a historical shift for Greece. Don't forget, this is a country under a military junta until 1974. They had that seven-year window. Democracy is taken very seriously, but now they have no clarity in that sort of environment.
And the issue is, of course, in Greece, tourism is clearly the main source of revenue. But if you have unrest, tourism is down. If you don't have unrest, where do the Greeks go, John?
Well, it's interesting. I've had these conversations, and I'm going to chair a session, an economist roundtable in early June. And then my panel is actually going to be on the roadmap. Where do you go from here? And the big picture stuff, Tim, and this is where it gets interesting. McKinsey did a study on behalf of the trade associations and the business associations in Greece and said, this is where we should be in 10 years. And if you look at that study, it's quite fascinating. It could be a trade hub for the Mediterranean stretching into North Africa. It could be a financial services hub for the Mediterranean stretching into North Africa. It does neither. It's got a phenomenal education base. The Greeks have gone around the world and have elected to come back to Greece. If you're not careful, you have, you know, human capital flight. And this is a very important window right now because you have all those Greeks who are educated abroad. They wanted to come back like they've had to the Middle East and to the Gulf. If the conditions aren't right, and that's the case what we see right now in Greece, they leave. So you can lose a generation if you're not careful. And youth unemployment there is over 50%, 51%. One out of two between the age of 15 and 24 doesn't have a job. It's not viable if you leave it the way it is.
It's an even scarier situation when you consider if you want to become a financial services hub, you want to become, I don't know, a re-export hub. These are not short-term policies, are they?
No, that's an excellent point. So if you look at what Dubai has done and what Abu Dhabi is doing, Qatar is aiming to do, and some of the other players in the region here, is they laid out a roadmap, you know, a 20-year roadmap in the case of Dubai, suggesting that you know what you find here. It's a financial services hub, it's a trade hub, it's a tourism hub, it's a transport hub, and that policy is not going to change. Now, Greece hasn't embarked on that yet, but that big picture thinking was absent, most would say. And this is why Greece, when they had that first 10 years of the euro, almost 10 years of the euro, they lived off a German economic policy but didn't reform, and they didn't put those big picture pillars in, you know, those pillars that support transport, financial services, tourism at a much grander scale than they're getting right now. The port infrastructure is not there in Greece. The labor unions have a stranglehold on a lot of the transportation services and the rest, and they haven't modernized the labor unions like they have in Germany. Germany's exporting like crazy. Why? Because they did reform in the 90s and the first part of this 21st century. The Greeks have not done that yet.
John, I'll ask you to put your crystal ball back down on its velvet pillow just for a few moments. But let's get back to the region. Oil, as ever, central to everything we do. But falling prices at the moment, extra supplies from Iraq.
Yes, it's interesting. We've seen about a 10% correction in oil prices. And on the back of that, Ali al-Naimi, the oil minister of Saudi Arabia, suggests that prices are still too high. So he doesn't want to kill off this weak economic recovery in America and the lack of recovery in Europe by sustaining prices well above $100 a barrel. Iraq, now despite the influence that people say Iran has over Iraq, is actually replacing all of Iran's supplies right now. Iraq's coming on quite strong, not as high as they said it would be, but it's a nice counterbalance to losing that Iranian production in July. You remember the sanctions that are going to be put on Iran from the European Union. So Iraq has filled the void. Libya's starting to fill the void. Saudi Arabia's filled the void. UAE and Kuwait have all stepped up their production to fill that void. The danger zone, of course, don't forget, July 2008, when there's that first whiff that those things are collapsing in one section of the world, like it happened during the banking crisis, if we have that again in Europe, you can go from quickly, you know, 100, 105 a barrel, you know, quickly, very quickly down to 50 or 60. So the Saudis and others in the region don't want that to happen. They're trying to manage it so high prices don't erode demand and then you have prices falling off the cliff. That's not what they want.
Stability is the theme that seems to be central to everything at the moment, not least of which in Syria, some form of stability at least. The news this week, Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan's told Syrian refugees, your victory is not far off. But with the UN plan to send, what is it, just 300 observers, isn't it, to monitor the ceasefire, even with, say, Italy pledging to add additional numbers, just how near is that far off?
Yeah, I know. It doesn't look promising. I interviewed the Turkish economy minister while he was in Dubai just over a week ago. And, you know, the Turks feel very responsible for Syria. That's why you see Prime Minister Erdogan, who actually staked a lot on Bashar al-Assad before the uprisings, and feels responsible for making sure that area stabilizes. Candidly, when you talk to different business leaders and government leaders, they don't know the roadmap, Tim. So, you know, they don't know if Bashar al-Assad is going to still survive. The King of Jordan, when we did an interview with him 6 months ago, suggested the same. We don't know where we're going yet. I think that's where the problem lies. Turkey would like to provide that support on the border. It's willing to take on the refugees. Does that president survive? Can they have a healing process? That's very hard to know. You know, what happens in that community after things settle down is not clear just yet, but it provides that wild card to the region that's not needed, but it also provides some impetus for investors to look into other areas. And I think that's one reason we see hotel rates and we see demand for flights in and out of Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar very strong right now. They're alternative markets to that instability in other parts of the region and in North Africa.
John, just very briefly, and on a, I guess, a slightly lighter note, news last week, we've seen Edvard Munch's The Scream, or one of the four Screams, selling around about 450 million dirhams in New York. And then the news today, Mark Rothko's Orange, Red and Yellow. It's just become the highest or the highest price paid for a contemporary work of art. It was, what, 1961. It's an unstable, or there's instability in the world, but in the art sector, it's going great guns.
Yeah, you know, this is the upper 1% that we often talk about in society. And if you look at the trend lines for the wealth of the upper 1% of the world, it's almost doubled in the last 20 years. So while, you know, we talk about global economic crisis and a banking crisis, there's a lot of excess capital at the upper end of the market. And when, you know, interest rates are this low and instruments in terms of the bond market are not paying, you know, phenomenal returns, though, as real estate, are partially for show, but partially as an investment, looks much more attractive, especially for some of the brand names like a Rothko. Extraordinary, the sort of numbers that we're talking about. But I think it kind of plays into the global exchange and even marketplace Middle East and the themes that we cover, Tim. There's a lot of capital in the emerging markets and in this region in particular. And so we don't know where all these buyers are coming from, but they're competing and driving up prices. This used to be the domain of the Americans and the Europeans. Not any longer. I think that's what this is a sign of with these record prices.
It's all changed, isn't it? John Defterios, CNN's Emerging Markets Editor, global of anchor of Global Exchange, and, of course, Middle East Marketplace based in Abu Dhabi. John, always good to speak with you.
Yeah, you take care. Have a good week. Yeah?
Thanks very much. Take care. For your time.